The following is a Comfortably Zoned Radio Network production.
Thank you, Tally Olson. I am back. You are comfortably zoned with me, the Zigzag Man, Alameda, California, right across the bay from San Francisco. Close to Moke from Oakland, so you know where we are. We are an island unto itself. And I have a guest who is, you can be Jerry Feidelberg, considered the among the elite people in Alameda. You owned a very successful pharmacy for many years. You were the pharmacist of the year in the state of California. And the main reason you're here, you are an interesting guy. And I say that that's the goal of a podcast producer, to meet up with the people who are the most interesting on the planet, if possible. And you are one of those. We're going to honor Sal Bando, who passed away recently. And we're going to talk about the life and times of Sal. This was a tough one for me, because the guys who are passing away now are my age. And Sal Bando was very big in my baseball memories. I was fortunate enough to be out here during the dynasty, the last true dynasty in baseball. 3 world champions in a row, 5 divisions in a row. And let me say, they were exciting times. Mixed in with that was the A's playing my Mets in the third of 1973, the third of the second of the 3 in a row. And Sal was a very big part of that. We're going to talk about that. But first, Jerry, let's talk about the surreal times that we live in. And I'm going to start, my first thing that I thought of today was that we have Pence added to the crew of Trump and Biden, who basically saw fit to take documents that were classified with them. What? I'm not going to make this a political thing. It's bipartisan. What gives people the idea that they could literally break the law and just rely on the fact that they're who they are? Is this crazy or what, Jerry Feidelberg? Welcome.
Well, first of all, Ralph, thank you again for having me on the podcast. Secondly, I'd like to shout out and toot our horn for the city of Alameda. Last week in the San Francisco Chronicle, they had a list of 25 cities in the Bay Area and the different counties in the Bay Area. And they took into fact all kinds of factors. They came up, the number one city to live in for quality of life was the city of Alameda. Number one in the Bay Area. How do you feel about that?
Wow. Wow. Underrated for so many years. I've been here 30 years now. And it's always gotten second shrift to a lot of cities. Number one, that includes climate, policing, the safety,
it's just
the quality
of life. We don't have the massive traffic like they do down on the peninsula. If you go out to Berkeley, if you try to go to Fairfield, go over the Bay Bridge at 5 o'clock, it's going to take you forever to get to Fairfield. And what is it, 40 miles? Probably take you 2 hours to get there. The traffic is unbelievable. But Alameda, there's no freeway through Alameda. We're surrounded by water on four sides, I think. And so if you come to Alameda, you have to want to come here. It's a wonderful bedroom community. It's, I think, in terms of price comparisons between here and the homes in Silicon Valley, we're a much better buy. You get a lot more bang for your buck than you do in Silicon Valley. And they have good restaurants. They have good movie theaters now, which they didn't have before. And it's not, there's just, when you drive in the city, very rarely do you have any traffic jams. It's easy to get around. So that's some of the reasons, plus the climate, the best climate in the Bay Area. But anyway,
absolutely. No wind, very moderate. We've had 4 or 5 weeks of the worst rain in consecutively, but that's not just Alameda. And incidentally, the last 4 or 5 days back into the 60s and sunny, and it's terrific living here. And one of the reasons for me it's terrific living here are neighbors like you. Thank you for being my friend, not just the podcast. So let's talk about your lovely Isla for a second. Recuperating from some injuries. Tell us how it's going with her.
Yeah, my lovely companion, Isla, had an accident last Friday. She pulled over. She was driving somewhere, and she noticed that the passenger side door was open. So she pulled over and got out of the car, shut the door, and on her way back to the driver's side, she stepped on a rock and fell down and injured most everything on her left side. Excuse me. She broke two bones, two ribs, number 3 and 4. She has a fracture in her pelvis. She fractured her sternum, and she also has a broken bone in her hand. And she was in Stanford Hospital up until yesterday, and they transferred her to an acute rehab facility in Los Gatos. And she has a very, very daunting recovery. She's going to be there for at least 2 weeks. And they have to do a mandatory minimum of 3 hours of occupational and physical therapy every day. So she's got her work cut out for her to get back to normal. She gets tired. She has on pain medication, but she's getting better. Her spirits are good. And, she wants to get better because she loves to travel. And we hope to do some traveling later this year. But let's go back to your first question, which we went off on a tangent, and I forgot. What was your first question?
Have things ever been this surreal with three human beings, whatever the political affiliation, they're in power, and they think it's just okay, hunky-dory, to take classified documents with them when they're out of power? What the hell is going on?
Yeah,
morally, in this country, can we not find better qualified people to lead us? And I'm not just talking about the obvious Santos and those people go on and on and on, but what's wrong with the moral fiber of this country who chooses, the people choose to elect jokes like that? And it's rhetorical, but worth a response from you, Jerry.
Well, you brought up the issues with classified documents being found at Trump's Mar-a-Lago, and then some at Biden's house, and now some at Pence's house. Now, you have to remember, when Biden was vice president and when Pence was vice president, people come in and pack up whatever they have. So if they have a file cabinet with stuff in it, The people don't go through it and say, oh, you got classified material here. They just throw everything in. And so it's very possible that Biden and Pence did not know that they had classified material. But it's what they did once they found out. Once they found out that they had classified material, they notified the archives, and the archives notified the Department of Justice, and the documents were returned immediately. In the case of Trump, he took way more material, and then when confronted with it, he lied about how much they had. He had a lawyer certify that everything was given back to the archives, and the archives knew that that wasn't so. The archives had to go to a judge and show probable cause why they should issue a subpoena. And then they issued a subpoena, and they did not get the response that they want. And then they had to go get a warrant to search Mar-a-Lago. So it's a totally different situation. Trump did not respond in a proper manner and said, oh, my gosh, I got all these classified documents. Let's try and get them back to the archives where they belong. He said, they're mine. They belong to me. They don't belong to him. And do the archives take this serious? Yes, they do. Years ago, Sandy Berger, who was I think he was in the Clinton administration, was at the National Archives, and he took a document. And he was severely punished for taking the document. You don't do that. They do not belong to you or as an individual. And if you do need a document for research or whatever, I guess you have to clear it with the archives and make sure it's okay that you can use the document. So they take this very, very seriously. So there are quite differences in the cases, in the situations between Pence and Biden and the situation with Trump. And the Justice Department under Merrick Garland has appointed a special counsel to both the Trump and to the Biden situation. But I don't know if what's going to happen with Pence. If they find more documents, maybe they'll assign a special counsel. But so far, I just think they had that one instance with Pence.
Well, very, very nice. But I think what you're saying lets Pence and Biden off the hook too easily. There were three separate places they found documents with Biden, for instance. And I know where every piece of property I own is in the house.
That's true, but you weren't the vice president of the United States. And they have tons of documents, and they have to read these documents, and you don't know the amount of reading that they have to do. And of course, you know, as I said, what Biden and Pence did was unintentional. And there's a difference between doing something intentional and unintentional. And so you have to realize their status as a member of the government. They were getting all the intelligence briefings. They were getting all kinds of documents to look at, and they have so many different classifications of documents, top secret, for your eyes only, sensitive, who knows? I don't know all the classifications, but they have tons of documents more. When I was on the Board of Trustees of the California Pharmacists Association, I would get packets every week. It took me 2 or 3 hours to read them, and this was just to be on the board of a not-for-profit pharmacy association, and it's a tremendous amount of reading, and you have to sift through it, and you try to understand what's going on. So
having the documents to begin with is questionable. Having them stored in a place where the co-resident with Biden is Hunter Biden. It's on his driver's license. That's scary to me.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that it was in an area, you know, in the garage. But again, you know, who put the documents in? Did he do it? Did he know he had them? Or did he? Or they just found him by accident? I don't know.
He's been out of Adam, Vice President. He's been out of vice presidency office for more than 6 years. It's
right.
His garage. It's where
yeah.
he keeps his vet. Don't
right.
you think
right.
the cabinets would have been looked at in
where,
7 years?
But I don't know. But where has he been for the last 2 years? He's been president. He had 4 years where he was out of office. And again, and I don't know what his work schedule was. I remember this was in 2017. We used to go to De Anza College. They had a program where they had guest speakers. And the first speaker that kicked off the 2017 schedule was Joe Biden. He spoke for an hour. And he took answers from the audience, and they do it two nights, and he probably had speaking engagements, and he may have been traveling all over. I just don't know how much time he spent at his Delaware home. He may have been at working in his office at where they found the documents. I forgot what they called it, the Penn Institute or wherever it was, and it's hard to say. I don't know. We don't know his work schedule. We don't know his work schedule, and it's hard to say how the documents got there. The National Archives didn't even know the documents were missing. They were surprised that he had them. So what they've done now is the archives have sent a letter to all the former presidents, Obama, Bush, Clinton, and Jimmy Carter. And have asked for them to see if they had any of their classified documents in their records. So it may be, as I said, when you and I move, we buy boxes and we pack this stuff up, we label the stuff what's in the box, and the movers come and take it. But when you're a president or vice president, you're not going to pack the boxes. Someone is going to come into your office, take all the files, dump them in there. They don't know what's in there. You don't know what's in there. You don't know. Who knows? Who knows? And it's hard to say. That's why they're doing the investigation, to find out, did he know? If he didn't know, when you found out, what did you do? And in the instance of Biden and Pence, they notified the Department of Justice that they had classified documents that they shouldn't have had. So, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt. They're innocent to proven guilty. Same thing with Trump. It looks like he's guilty, and he did all these things, and he obstructed justice. Well, if he goes to trial, right now he's innocent until proven guilty. That's built into the Constitution.
Right. Well, part of thinking that he's innocent or presuming he's innocent is common sense. What did you just tell me about his attorney when we were off the air?
Whose attorney? Trump's?
Trump's.
Well, Trump and his attorney just got sanctioned down in Florida in federal court for filing frivolous lawsuits. Oh yeah, I remember what you he had an attorney certify that all the documents had been sent back. She signed an affidavit. It was Christina Bob, and she was the attorney, and she also had a disclaimer. She signed something or had something signed that said she is only signing this based on the information that they're giving to me. In other words, I really don't know, but I'm certifying that what they're telling me is true. But don't hold it against me if it's not true. So she's in a dicey situation, and they gave back just a portion. They just gave back a portion, and Trump has said that the documents is his. And what they usually do is, you know, when a president leaves office, usually there's a presidential library, and there's a time when they put the documents from the administration into a storage unit, and usually the presidents can go through there and pick the documents. And once it's cleared as not being top secret or revealing anything that they don't want to know, then it goes into the presidential library. But the top secret stuff or anything that could jeopardize national security is not going to be turned over to the library. You know, for example, and this is not a presidential library, but this was, I was in Los Alamos many years ago, and we were at the Bradbury Museum in Los Alamos. And as you know, Los Alamos is where they developed the atomic bomb. And in the library, there was a letter from Albert Einstein to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And Einstein in the letter said, "You know, Mr. President, this guy Fermi is onto something." That was the gist of the letter. So that's as you know, did you know how secret Los Alamos was? When all the workers that went there, they could not have their mail sent. There was no post, no addresses at Los Alamos. Their mail was sent to an address in Santa Fe, New Mexico. They did not know, people did not know where they were. They thought they were in Santa Fe, but they weren't. They were in Los Alamos. It was super secret. So those are things you got to keep secret.
Yeah. All right. Hey, things are as messed up as we've both ever seen them. And it's going to get better, but we don't know when. We do know, and this is my segue, that the absolute underrated heart of the Oakland A's, Sal Bando, he passed away this past week. And I thought we'd say a few words about him and talk about the A's dynasty, the last dynasty in baseball, true dynasty, won 3 in a row, 5 in a row divisions. It was incredible. And Captain Sal was the heart of it. Talk about him a little bit.
Well, you're absolutely correct about the A's. The A's are the only team other than the New York Yankees to win 3 world championships in a row. Never been done by any other team. And as you said, they were division champs in 71 and 75, and then they won 3 American League pennants in a row. And Sal Bando was the heart and soul of that club. He was the captain of the club. He was their third baseman, and he was with the A's for 10 years, and then after he finished with the A's, he went to the Brewers, and he finished his last 5 years as a player with the Brewers, and later became their general manager. So Sal had wonderful teammates. The A's had wonderful pitching. They had wonderful players. Sal was the third baseman. Campy Campanaris was a shortstop. Dick Green at second base. Mm-hmm. First base, I think Mike Epstein was there 1 year, and some other, Willie McCovey was there one of the years. And Reggie Jackson was in right field, and Bill North was in the center fielder. Joe Rudy was the left fielder. And the catcher was either Gene Tennis or my good friend Ray Fossey, the late Ray Fossey, who's missed immensely. And their pitching was Catfish Hunter and Kenny Holtzman, Vida Blue Moon Odom.
With hey, starters. Raleigh Fingers in relief.
Yeah, Darryl Knowles was in relief, and Paul Lindblad. So they were loaded. They were loaded. And they won three championships in a row. The first 2 years, 72 and 73, they were managed by Dick Williams. But I guess Dick Williams didn't get along with Charlie Finley. So he took a hike, and then Finley hired Alvin Dark, and Dark was the manager that won the World Series in 74. So, but it was kind of interesting. I was looking at the attendance figures for those years. In 1972, you know, we talk about the A's not drawing well. The A's, after winning the World Series in 1972 here somewhere. Okay. They won the World Series in 1972. Their attendance for that entire year, they had won the division before in 71. You ready for this? Their attendance was 921,323. They didn't even draw a million people in 1972. 1973, their attendance improved to 1,763,000 people. In 74, now they won two pennants in a row. If you had won two pennants in a row and you're living in New York or Boston, that ballpark's going to be filled every day, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
But here you are on the West Coast. In their third championship year, 1974, the A's drew 845,693 people. Unbelievable. Mm. Unbelievable. So, but anyway, Captain Sal, broke in with the A's in 1966 in Kansas City. And he was with them when the A's moved the franchise started the 1968 season. But they had the beginnings of the dynasty. They had Catfish Hunter on that roster. And in 1968, Catfish pitched the perfect game. And then over the years, I think they, in the 1971 season, they made a big trade with the Chicago Cubs. They sent Rick Mundy to the Cubs for Kenny Holtzman, and that bolstered the pitching rotation. So they had the players, and they had Captain Sal. And he was a very, very consistent ball player. He hit, 1 year, 74, he hit .243. He had a .352 on-base percentage. On-base plus slugging was .778. He had 22 homers and 103 RBIs. Another year, he had 29 homers and 98 RBIs. That was in 73. He had .287. In 72, he had 15 homers and 77 RBIs. But in 75, he had, again, very similar, 15 homers, 78 RBIs. In 76, his last year with the A's, he had 27 homers and 84. So he was a very consistent ball player.
Very consistent. And more than that, in addition to that, he was the man in the clubhouse that you didn't hear about with all the crap that was going on between Reggie and this, that, and the other thing. It was, he was tremendously steady in every way as a player and as a man. And he proved it, or the Brewers recognized it and made him a general manager. He was that impressive, a human being. And the baseball man.
Yeah, well,
I'm saddened by his loss. Not
well, we
just
are.
Because, I, yeah.
And because
he's my
because
age.
We're at that age.
Yes.
And from what I understand, he battled cancer for 5 years. When we're at, just like when we lost Ray Posse a year or two. Well, I think we lost him in 2021. Ray was a professional. He was a professional ball player. He was hard as nails. I would talk with Ray. Ray did not like the Buster Posey rule, where you had he couldn't barrel into the catcher at home plate. You know, he couldn't block the plate anymore. And then Ray would say, "I would catch both ends of a doubleheader, and that would be after a night game. I wouldn't, you know, I'm there to play baseball." And so he was a professional. And so was Sal Bando. He was very professional. He went about his business. as you said, he didn't get involved in all the chaos that's going on. He was probably the glue that kept the clubhouse together. And he was a very, very important cog in the A's success. I remember, I think it was the 72 World Series, and Gene Tennis had that great series. And I said, who the hell is Gene Tennis? I never heard of him before. But he became a star. Joe Rudy had great seasons. Of course, Reggie, I think one year missed it with he was injured. I think he missed the 72 World Series. But they won anyway. They had outstanding pitching. They had solid ball players.
You mentioned Gino Tennis. His name was Tenacci. And he was another guy that kept it together. And he happened to be living in San Ramon when I was living in Danville. And we'd meet up every now and again at Big Ben's. Big Ben's Davidson had a bar in Danville. And
the Raiders' Ben Davidson was involved out there too, huh?
He was indeed. And I'll tell you a very funny story about Ben Davidson. He's a Jew boy. I'm a Jew boy. And I got
really?
To know him a little and had a small little tab at the bar. He says,
I know
this tab is safe because I got the Jewish mafia in my back room.
You're blowing my mind. I didn't know that Ben was Jewish.
Ben Davidson, absolutely. And I was a big Jets fan. And out from New York, and we'd argue and talk about the old Raiders and the Jets. And he had this big old picture in the bar of him making that famous hit on Joe Namath, knocking him out of bounds. And he just pointed up to that picture and said, see, Jew boy, that could be you. anyway, great memory. Gino Tenacci, wherever you are, I'm thinking about you. I'm thinking about Stan Gilbertson not the Sharps. I can't even think of the name anymore, but he was the guy I meet up with and played tennis at Big Ben.
Are you thinking of the Seals, the California Devils?
I am indeed. And this was a team that Charlie Finley owned as well.
Yeah.
And Mr. Len Shapiro, who
was a discussed that with Len.
Yeah, yes. So it all comes together in our memories of sports. And, you know, it seems like every day we're losing someone. Music, family, sports. Mortality sucks. How about that?
Does it ever? But let's keep in mind that I believe in either opening day or one of the first or second opening days, they're going to honor the 1973 World Series team. It's the 50th anniversary. Can you believe it? 50 years ago? And what was unique about that World Series is that was with the last games that Willie Mays played as a player.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. And had they pitched Seaver, things might have been different. But it was the only World Series game that I ever attended before or since, the sixth game. And I left that sixth game knowing that the Mets were doomed.
You knew they were doomed, huh?
I knew they were doomed. If they lost the sixth game, momentum shifted, and they weren't going to win the game number seven. And I was heartbroken. I had been a Mets fan in New York, followed them out to California. I went out to California and still was a Mets fan from here. and and still am, as a matter of fact. Hey, Jerry, we're up against the time-wise. You're a delight.
Oh, thank you.
I hope we can do this another 10 years because...
so do I.
You're my inspiration. You've got the... How old are you, Jerry?
How old am I?
Yeah.
I'm 84.
84 years old. People listening that didn't know that, they go, this guy is 84? Listen to that voice. Listen to those signals. You still got your bag of marbles, and there are no holes in the bag. And that's why you're my inspiration.
No tobacco, very little liquor. I do have a scotch maybe once or twice a year, a glass of wine occasionally, and absolutely no weed whatsoever. But
but you know what I always tell you, Jerry, more for me.
That's right, more for you. And by the way, the legal pot growing farms in California, there was an article in the paper, are in distress because they've allowed some of the big farms to get bigger, and they're not able to compete, so they're going out of business.
And
but
what's wrong when they legalized it? When they promised to legalize it, or when they attempted to legalize it, one of the things that they said is that they would provide union jobs and fair wages to the workers. And they never have done that. Now, I will concede that the best weed you could buy is through the clubs, but not by much. And there's a black market out there that is extremely potent. It's still going. So I'm going to tell you, as your friend Uncle Ralph, the weed guy, look for the good old guy and the black market. Don't pay taxes, and because they're not doing what they said they were going to do. And that's my speech.
Yeah, one of the other problems is that the state of California has very high taxes on the weed, and so it allows the black market to survive, and they're not getting the results that they thought they were going to get from it. So they have to look at it. If they had a legislature that was, doing what they should be doing, they should be revisiting what they've set up and restructure it so that the small growers can survive, and that the price of the weed is comparable, and that will kill the black market.
That would be nice. And again, the workers. Why should workers be so drastically underpaid in this world that we live in that they have to resort to food stamps and other supplements of their income that the government pays for? It's crazy.
Let's get on a conference call with Gavin Newsom. Maybe he's a sportsman. He can join us on the podcast. How about that?
He'd be glad to. I'm sure. He's just beating down the door. All right, my friend. We'll talk soon, off the air and on the air. I love you, Joe.
Okay. We'll talk to you later.
Be good. Best to Isla. And thank you for listening, everybody. Comfortably Zoned Radio Network. Joey Feivelberg was the guest. I'm Ralph Tycho, the weak link of it all. And I would just like to say happy trails and adios.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
The proceeding has been a Comfortably Zoned Network production. You are advised to keep your dreams wet, your humor dry, your children and grandchildren out of military recruiting offices and off the laps of clerics who wear dresses. Thank you for listening, everyone. Happy trails.